At Classic Group factories in Jordan, scores of young women, guest workers from Sri Lanka and Bangladesh, are reported brutalized and repeatedly raped. They sew women's clothes for giant retailers, including Hanes, Target, Sears, Macy's, Land's End, and others. The garments enter the U.S. duty-free under the U.S.-Jordan Free Trade Agreement. Chicago-area high school students have organized to protest these major retailers for purchasing clothing from these factories. I'll talk with a teacher and students from the Dundee Crown High School in Carpentersville in just a moment. But first, Charles Kernighan is director of the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights. They're a U.S. watchdog group that's helped one woman get her story of abuse, torture, and rape out to the public. The group continues to reach out to other potential rape victims. Meanwhile, Sears and other companies say that they can't find any violations in Jordan, and the Associated Press reports that workers at the Classic factory appeared fearful during a visit by an AP reporter. These allegations are especially troubling in light of labor provisions in the U.S.-Jordan Free Trade Agreement.
The Free Trade Agreement was actually negotiated under the Bill Clinton administration, like in 2000, then passed on to President Bush. And we set up this U.S.-Jordan Free Trade Agreement, which supposedly had the best labor rights provisions of any free trade agreement. It wasn't a sidebar like NAFTA. The core labor rights standards were right inside the agreement. So this was a real breakthrough. And it started in 2001, and it just proceeded. We hadn't even really heard of the U.S.-Jordan Free Trade Agreement until a few years later, 2005, 2006, we were getting calls and faxes from poor, very poor guest workers who were in Jordan begging for help. And one worker actually sent us like a handwritten fax, which was a mixture of Bengali and English. And eventually we could decipher it. And it said, please help us. They're beating us. They're raping our women. They're killing us. And we were like in a state of shock. So we tracked it down. Barbara and I went undercover, just posing as tourists in Jordan. Met with workers in these factories, these free trade zone factories. We met with them all across the country of Jordan. We would meet in cheap, broken-down tea shops where bosses would never come.
Well, describe a free trade zone area in Jordan. I imagine, you know, most of us have no idea what this looks like and don't see Jordan as this big manufacturing base.
Well, yeah, Jordan right now is sending over $1 billion worth of garments to the U.S. duty-free. But the industrial zones, they're basically like prisons. They're surrounded by barbed wire. There are guards. I mean, these are pretty primitive places where you have the factory. Within this compound, you also have dormitories for the guest workers. Now, the Jordanians won't work in these factories, so it's all guest workers. Maybe 30,000 young women, most of them, from Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, India, Nepal, China, Egypt, and these women are just locked into these compounds. And at the case of this Classic factory, which is the largest factory in Jordan, the largest export factory, the women are only allowed out 6 hours a week. And we had to fight to win that. You know, if we hadn't struggled like that, these workers would just be locked in around the clock in these industrial parks. They're not allowed out. But right now, they're allowed out just for 6 hours each week on Friday, which is the Muslim holiday.
Now, it sounds like the good thing is that this free trade agreement has all these labor provisions in it and, you know, we can work it out because we've got the enforcement mechanisms in the treaty.
Yes, and as a point of fact, they've never been implemented. So when we first went to Jordan in 2005 and returned in 2006 and every other year, the workers were actually stripped of their passports, which is a crime of human rights, a human rights crime. It's an international crime. So all the workers were stripped of their passports, which meant they were indentured servants because they couldn't leave the country, they couldn't do anything. Many workers were just routinely beaten. They were cheated of their wages. The dormitories were filthy, and it was just like a torturous life. I mean, 15, 16, 17-hour shifts, 7 days a week. It really was worse than slavery.
And so why not institute all the labor provisions and enforce them?
Well, it turns out that the U.S. government didn't really have a plan to implement anything. It was all just an abstraction. They wrote this bill with all the workers having their rights, and in broad daylight, over the course of years, the U.S. government sat by while the workers were stripped of their passports and beaten and cheated of their wages. So, in other words, there was nobody watching. There was nobody looking. And even now, like when we put out our first report and testified in the Senate and testified in the House, you know, it caused a big wave, a big reaction, but essentially very little has changed. They do have their passports back. You know, that's a valuable step forward. But conditions in the factory are still terrible sweatshop conditions. In this classic factory, for example, they're working from 7:30 in the morning until 8:30 at night, if they're lucky. They're working the 13-hour shift, 14-hour shift. But they also then continue working to 9:30, 10:30. Before shipments have to go out, they're working 18-and-a-half-hour shift. So these are really cruel and very hard places where you just work. And you'll do this 6 and 7 days a week. Maybe you'll get 2 days off a month. It's a very, very miserable life and a very tough life. And they only get paid a take-home wage of about 61 cents an hour.
Does anybody in Jordan benefit from this? Because it sounds like all the people are coming from far away to work in these factories in Jordan, and there aren't a lot of Jordanians even supervising the factories. Do they own them? Who's in charge here?
No, basically it's actually set up for, you know, companies like Walmart and Sears and Hanes and others to, like, produce garments very cheaply with prison-like labor. And the most startling fact to this is that these garments enter the U.S. duty-free. And in 2010, garment exports from Jordan to the U.S. were up 34%. It's booming. And the reason it's booming is because they can use near slave labor, these young women. They can use these women to make these garments, pay them 61 cents an hour, mistreat them, and then the garments commit to the United States duty-free. In that one single factory, the classic factory, that one single factory has 5,000 workers, most of them these young women. They sent $120 million worth of goods, apparel goods, to the U.S. last year in 2010. They have a tax break, a tariff break, of $20 million to ship these garments to the U.S. So what it does is, of course, it just makes the garments much cheaper for Walmart, and their profits go up, and for Sears, and for the other companies, and for Hanes. So the only people that are really the winners here are the big retailers. And the workers have it very tough. They can save some money, but it's a very, very cruel life. Nobody would go there if they knew exactly what conditions were like.
You're listening to Worldview on WBEZ. I'm Jerome McDonald, speaking with Charles Kernighan. He's executive director of the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights. And right now they're involved in a campaign to draw attention to worker abuse in Jordan, specifically the classic factory. And it sounds like you've been pretty successful. You've been testifying in Congress. I know that the U.S.-Jordan Labor Committee is meeting and they're having discussions about these kind of things. Do you feel like you've been making some progress here?
A little bit. I think the real progress will come from the students, the high school students that you're going to be speaking with. I mean, nobody wants to take on students who are basically the same age of these young workers in Jordan. So I have a feeling that the U.S. State Department really doesn't know what to do. When you're confronted with concrete problems to deal with, they just don't know what to do. And Jordan's a very, very corrupt country, so that you carry this corruption all around too. So this battle is not anywhere near being over. And the retailers are just going to try to stay quiet and just stay out of the way. And, you know, they're hoping it'll just go away, but it won't go away.
You were describing your trip to the classic factory. Tell us about some of the women and the circumstances they've faced there.
Well, we've been to Jordan, like I said, many times, but we were there in December of 2010. And we were meeting with workers in a safe location, secret location, like a little broken down hotel. And all of a sudden, the workers started to hand us discs. And we knew about the violations. We knew about the beatings and the long hours and the miserable conditions and 7-day work weeks. And we knew that workers were being sexually assaulted and abused. But the workers really didn't speak about it until December of 2010. These people came forward and gave us these discs, and we took them back to the United States. And of course, we had to find translators for Sinhalese and Hindi and Bengali and all. And the tapes, when we actually got the translations and sat down to look at these tapes again, Barbara and I were in the office, it was early, like Friday morning, and we watched it and listened to the translation, and we both were just like crying. These women were talking about being brutally raped by the managers. And there's one manager in the factory, Anil Santa, who's the general manager of the factory, and he is a serial rapist. And we're talking about kids that are 20, 21, maybe, you know, a little tiny bit older. They would just take these women and rape them. And they would say to them, look, you open your mouth and we'll deport you right out of this country. You'll be sent home. You know, they have to pay a lot of money to get these three-year work contracts. So it's a very big threat. They spend like maybe $1,000, anywhere from like $500, $700, up to about $1,500 to buy work contracts. And the parents don't have any money, so they have to borrow all of that. So they're like in debt when they get there. So they have a great control over these women. They say to them, you know, if you say a word about what we're doing, you say a word about the sexual abuse, we will deport you immediately. You'll go back to Sri Lanka, for example. The morals, the religious feelings in Sri Lanka is if you're raped, you'll never be able to get married again. So the women are in this trap. They owe this money to buy the contract. If they publicly say they were raped, they'll never be able to marry. They'll never have a family. And they'll drag their parents down into poverty because the parents borrowed the money so that these young women could go to the factory to work. So that's the trap they're in. And in fact, this will sound pretty extreme, but it's very easy to do away with these women. In countries like Sri Lanka, women talking to the Sri Lankan human rights people, they tell us you could have someone killed for $200. So it's easy. And so like these women are just trapped in this fear. And the one tape, there was many of them, but one tape that killed us, the woman was saying, we call her Kamala because we were hiding their real names. And she said, he raped me over and over again. And she said, I was so humiliated, so embarrassed that I'd kill myself. But I can't because I'm the only breadwinner from my family. We're a very poor family. And if I kill myself, my parents will go under. And she was returning back to Sri Lanka. And she said, you know, we live in one room house. And I will not be able to take my clothes off in front of my mother because he bit me all over my body and I've got scars all over my body. Story after story after story after story like this. I mean, some of the most brutal and miserable conditions we've ever seen. And it's worker after worker after worker after worker. And the big multinational